If you've been told you need a filling crown or a root canal, get a second opinion at Dental Pros of Utah and American Fork. They utilize the latest biomimetic techniques to rebuild your teeth in order to prevent ever having to get crowns or root canals later in life. DentalProsOfUtah.com, 801-756-0360. That's 801-756-0360. Let's get to know the foe. Another football segment right now. Let's get out to the Band of Brothers hotline and welcome in Nathan Summers. He covers East Carolina football. What's happening, Nathan?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for hopping on and spending a few moments with us. We love to delve into the schedule during this time, post-spring, get to know the foe. And East Carolina, you know, they've had their shakeups in the coaching staff. They've had their shakeups at the quarterback position. You had a guy transfer out, go to Virginia. You had an okay season last year. They're looking to bounce back. How did you guys look post-spring or during spring ball?
Well, I think there was a ton of room for improvement, first of all, and almost across the board. And, there's obviously a lot of kind of negative film to watch in the offseason after 3-9. Especially given that the team started 2-0, so that the downward slide of this team really was a kind of a long, painful thing to watch. The only game they really won the rest of the year was against a UConn team that fired their coach at the end of it. So there wasn't a lot, to build on, and there was kind of just some guaranteed transition that was going to happen. You had a senior, running back that was brought there to play quarterback, had changed over to wide receiver and ends up being your leading rusher. And that really exemplified, I think, kind of the identity crisis that they went through under Scotty Montgomery in his first year. But I think some of that, obviously, as you guys know, at least some of it is natural. Obviously, at least some of it is trying to identify personnel in that first year. And in some cases, obviously, that works out. In a lot of cases, that does not work out. But it helps having a Zay Jones on your team at wide receiver. And, obviously, Scotty was able to ride that. To some positive results. These weren't blowout losses all year, every year, but coming into spring, they just had an awful lot to work on, and including both lines up front, especially the offensive line.
Nathan, BYU fans, and in this show, we were pretty familiar with Ruffin McNeil. We had him on the program. Colorful guy, probably fun to work with as far as giving you colorful comments. But he's gone now, and Scotty Montgomery's been there. Tell us a little about Coach Montgomery, what kind of coach he is to work with, as well as what his style might be.
Well, I guess the best way of describing, the difference between the two coaches, first off, would be that, Ruffin McNeil is a true product of college football. He was a very family-oriented guy, and that's definitely the way that he sold and ran and sustained his program. If you weren't a part of his family, then you weren't going to stick around very long. And that is the extended player family. Guys that bought into that were his star players, Justin Hardy, Shane Carton, those guys that were here a few years back. They were the quintessential players because they really bought into that kind of a lifestyle and that kind of a team. And I would say on the other side of it, Scotty Montgomery is probably more of a product of his NFL experience, in that this team is run a little bit more, or I guess I should say a lot more, like a business. And I think he treats these guys more like he has professional guys under him. Guys that have to earn it every day, but in a much different way than if you're, talking about being part of a family. It's not really that way, and it's not that he's not a great guy. He is. He's a dynamic and smart guy. He's just definitely more of an all-business kind of a mindset.
What was accomplished in spring football?
Well, in the short term, you know, Scotty's never been shy about naming starters, and he named – turned right around and named Gardner Minshew the starting quarterback really at the very beginning of spring. And there's at least some doubt as to whether that will survive to the opening day of the season or not. But, I think that you established that at least he is a credible quarterback. He is not an extremely consistent quarterback all the time. But I think that you learned that some of the retooling that they've done on the lines, and they changed the entire defensive scheme to a 4-2-5. After spending a lot of last season playing nickel anyway. I think that they've made a lot of progress at those very basic fundamental places where last year, when they were still playing a 3-4 last year, quite honestly, guys, that defensive line didn't really have a game all season where they truly competed. They had some things go their way against NC State to win that game, and they beat a couple of other far lesser opponents. But every other game day of the season, that defensive front seven just got worked out. So I think some progress was made there. I think the 4-2-5 is going to take some adjustment, but I think that four-man front definitely suits them more. And other side of the ball, I would say the same thing. I think the line has grown some. Some guys have changed position. Some young guys that played at the end last year, have, at least in the coach's eyes, I think made some strides. So, and you still have some playmakers that are older guys that are around from the old, much more wide-open offensive system, and it doesn't hurt to have those kind of guys around.
Nathan, I want to stay with the defense just a little bit. It gave up 36.1 points per game last year, and you talked about the change in the scheme. Is that hard, you think, on a new coaching staff that just came in last year and installed a system, and now they're revamping it again?
It is, obviously, yeah. I think that just, I think identifying personnel first and foremost can be tough, and to that end, they had a few different guys that were playing that nickel spot in the defense, and I think they liked a few different guys at different times. But I do also believe that the secondary got torched on a few nights last year, but I think they like the guys that they have there. I think they have, quite a bit of talent to work with, and they get a transfer from Auburn this year that is active now after sitting out last year, named Tim Mervin, who is a real playmaker, and he was quite honestly one of the highlights of spring. And they have a really talented young linebacker named Aaron Ramsur that was part of Scotty's first signing class. That had a really, really big spring. He's going to be one of those two inside linebackers, it looks like, in that scheme. And he's a heck of a playmaker, by all accounts. But as you know, spring can only tell you so much. So, but I think there's a lot of promise there that this scheme can really benefit the talent that they have right now.
We're talking to Nathan Summers right now at NateSum99, covers East Carolina football for the Daily Reflector. He's on ESPN 960. Nathan, there's some competition maybe going on in the offseason at certain position groups, but and you've mentioned some of the playmakers. What are the biggest weaknesses of this football team?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is just getting past the poor results of last year, and kind of what we just talked about, making this transition. On defense, I think that there will be probably some growing pains, but I think the secondary, once again, even though there may be talent there, that's what's going to be tested by most teams. So I think it remains to be seen whether that's a true weakness or not. Again, I think there's a lot of talent there, but if all five of those guys can't play together, then that will be the place that most teams, certainly in conference, that saw them last year, and we'll see some of the same personnel this coming year. That's where they'll go at them, and I think depth at linebacker is a concern. You have a couple of guys that have been around a long time, and a couple of guys, again, that have a lot of promise. But I think it remains to be seen almost at every position on defense. So offense, you have a lot more commodity, a lot more guys that at least have played some football. You've got a great senior wide receiver in Jimmy Williams that got awarded a medical redshirt year to come back and play again this year. So I think there's a lot more known about the offense that's good than there is on the defense, and there's just a lot to prove, I think, on defense.
Nathan, it appears that you will know a lot about this team early on. That schedule starts off, I think it's pretty difficult. You're talking about James Madison, who's one of the better lower division teams, mm-hmm. than West Virginia and Virginia Tech. That's quite a bit to chew for this team, isn't it?
It is, and it's really indicative of how ECU has scheduled football really since I've been covering the team last decade and a half. That trend really began in earnest when Terry Holland was here as the athletic director, and it has quite frankly continued. They have, like a lot of teams, at least embraced the idea of playing an FCS type opponent in that opener these last several years, whereas in the past that trip to West Virginia was very often the first game of the year for ECU. What was usually a four-game, just absolutely blockbuster kind of non-conference schedule. But, there's nothing new. For us that cover the team, it's nothing new. For fans, it's really nothing new. But for a team that really needs to find its way, it is a mighty tough way to go through the first month of the season. But obviously, as they'll learn a whole lot about this team and about this personnel by the time that ends.
Nathan, I want to discuss with you the AAC, the future of the AAC. Mike Oresko calls it the Power Six. Do you think that they will eventually be invited into the Big Boys Club and East Carolina can have access to that which they currently do not have access to?
You know, it's such a tough question. You know, I think Mike Oresko certainly believes that it will happen. I think he looks at it more as a matter of time, and I guess a matter of, you know, making the right point to the right people, I guess, or making it enough times. You know, he's a really dynamic guy, a really great guy to deal with as a media member, because he really is a TV guy in his heart and soul. And I think that's great for the conference. In terms of whether or not any of that effort gets the door open by the guys that have the exclusive club right now, I don't know. I mean, I think that's very questionable. I think that, you know, it's a much different view if you're already in the Power Five framework than it is even if you are the best next league. And I think that's obviously how this league sells itself, is and the whole Power Six idea, obviously, is that idea that, yeah, this is the strongest conference outside of those Power Five leagues. But, you know, again, that doesn't get you into the country club necessarily. Just because you're the best amateur doesn't mean that you can necessarily play with a pro, and you know it, or you know what I mean. And I'm not saying that they're not. I think they are absolutely an awesome league. But you know what I'm saying, that, you know, I just don't think that when you're cashing as big of a check as the Power Five leagues are on TV and everything else, do you have any pressure on you to let the next best league in? So I think it's, you know, I think Mike Oresko fully believes it's going to happen, but I don't know that makes it so.
What are the best teams? Which are the best teams in the AAC this year, according to your knowledge?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the teams that have been the traditional powers in this league, even going through some rebuilding, are going to come back as some of the better teams. And you know, certainly in the east side of it, it's, you know, Temple obviously has sustained itself, I think, as a good team. Now, you know, I think that they're going through obviously some rebuilding and some growing pains, but I think, you know, the same schools that we hear every year are going to be good again. Houston's going to be good again in the West, obviously. You know, Tulsa was an interesting up-and-down team last year, I think, in this league. I think they could be a good team. Cincinnati, very up-and-down team that, you know, has a lot of talent still. But, yeah, I think that right now, you know, those former Conference USA members outside of Cincinnati and Houston are you know, struggling to find their way a little bit in this league. And ECU, is great evidence of that. I think ECU could have a much better season, but I don't think I would put them in the class of contenders by a long shot. You know, in Central Florida, same. I mean, rebuilding off of some really tough, you know, a really tough year a couple of years ago, but I think they're one of the more talented teams probably now, and they, you know, have a lot of beliefs. So I think it's a league where anything is possible.
The reason why I like BYU and the AAC is because of the matchups that we've had recently. The Memphis Bowl brawl, that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
the Cincinnati game at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, I thought that was a really good matchup. Even the East Carolina game at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, that was a good matchup. You had two quarterbacks that were really good, athletic. I think the lefty came in that game. I can't remember his name, and showed well. Kept it competitive. BYU, if it all turns out like I think I would like it to, and if Mike Oresko is right and he's got this American Athletic Conference thing pinned down, which I think once the Big 12 disassembles and OU goes to the Big Ten or the SEC, Texas maybe ends up with the Pac-12, or maybe they go SEC as well. That leaves everyone else, right? All the, along the West Coast and the Midwest, and you have to wonder if the AAC is able to harness some of those opportunities and bring in everybody and truly make it an American Athletic Conference and create maybe a Power Six.
Yeah, and you know, that was sort of the ill-fated vision, I think, of Conference USA when it, you know, first came into being, and it kind of knew that it had this sort of random collection, at least at the time, and still to a large extent of schools. But I agree with you, and I think that you not only would have a true American Athletic Conference in that sense, but you would have really some of the some of the greatest environments, you know, and you mentioned the ECU game there, and that was, to me, one of the coolest first-time environments for me as a sports writer, and I'll obviously always remember it. But I can tell you, I think ECU's, you know, players to some extent were caught up in that environment. I think they most certainly were as that game started to turn around the other direction. But, yeah, I thought that, you know, the first half of that game was one of my favorite recent first halves of football that I've seen, just because it was so exciting and you had so much back and forth. It's such a wide-open game, too. But I think that that could be the future of a great conference, as I think you mentioned. I will be very interested to see what the next few layers of conference, either deconstruction and or expansion, really are, though, and when those things all happen. And, of course, you know, we'll all talk about it until it does and talk about it long after it does. But I think now with conference expansion, every time it's not actively going on, everybody kind of taps their foot and everything kind of lines itself up for the next time it does happen. But I agree that it could be a pretty amazing American conference if some things fell that way.
Well, it would be so intriguing to me. And granted, I don't think there would be a whole lot of cross-pollination as far as you know, if you maintain the current structure of the AAC and then you're adding all these other teams on the West Coast and the Midwest, you would essentially have these two divisions, maybe like 16, 18 teams. You would stay in conference, play your conference, your division, you'd win your division, and then you would have that conference championship at the end of the season. And because of that, maybe you merit a look at that college football playoff because of your strength of schedule, because you did beat that other division leader, and you're a true conference champion with some pretty good teams out there, some teams that knock off Power 5 teams consistently.
Well, I agree, and I think, too, that it also plays into, you know, what will always be the ultimate thing in college football. I think you would play a lot better on television. I think those games would be ultimately more exciting. Even the ones that are, you know, sort of East versus West matchups would have, I think, a lot of intrigue to them. And, yeah, you would have collected together a lot of great environments, a lot of great markets, a lot of cool teams, you know, a lot of traditions that are very different. But I think that's the only way that could work in a really mass appeal sort of way. But, yeah, I think, again, it would be intriguing, as you mentioned, and it would be probably some pretty good TV.
Indeed. Nathan, we appreciate you being with us on this beautiful day. Thanks for spending some time with us and breaking down East Carolina football. We got to know the foe a little bit better today with you, Nathan.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Indeed, Nathan Summers of the Daily Reflector at NateSummit99 if you want to keep up to date on all things East Carolina. If you've been told you need a filling crown or a root canal, get a second opinion at Dental Pros of Utah and American Fork. They utilize the latest biomimetic techniques to rebuild your teeth in order to prevent ever having to get crowns or root canals later in life. DentalProsOfUtah.com, 801-756-0360. That's 801-756-0360.